where we were supposed to be going next after the exam is to alkynes. So we had started talking about the hydrogenation reaction as one of our most recent reactions. I want to start with hydrogenation of alkynes because there's in fact several different kinds, as I think I might have hinted. So let's just start with plain hydrogen and platinum, or palladium. So alkyne has got two pi bonds, and so you might imagine that if you were to hydrogenate, you might be able to take an alkyne, react one of the pi bonds, and make an alkene, which is, in fact, true. Problem is, the alkene itself is reactive to exactly the same conditions. So there isn't really a way to stop the reaction using the normal platinum or palladium catalyst at the alkene. Instead, you go all the way to the alkane. So if you just have plain hydrogenation conditions, again, you can't say, oh, well, let's hope that only one molecule of hydrogen is going to react and we'll make the alkene instead. No, we're going to take it all the way down to the alkane. But there is a way to get around this, which is to make a less reactive version of a catalyst, what's known as a poison catalyst. So there is a particular catalyst known as Lindler's catalyst, which there's different formulations, but essentially it contains lead sulfate or some other lead salt, along with a nitrogen-based compound called quinoline. Now those impurities or those different additives, I'm not going to hold you responsible for knowing, but you do need to know the term Lindler's catalyst because it's such a common reagent. And again, it's specifically used because it has reduced reactivity. And so it does let you selectively reduce an alkyne to an alkene. But remembering the geometry, the way that the hydrogenation reaction works, where you have a metal surface where the, in this case, alkyne would come down to react with hydrogen that had already been absorbed on that metal surface. So same situation again, where the two hydrogens would end up adding to the same face of that pi bond. But now instead of it being syn addition to a double bond, this is a triple bond we're talking about, what that's going to leave is a pi bond. But since both the hydrogens added to the same face of that pi bond, you're going to therefore make a cis alkene. So, if we have platinum or palladium, and then hydrogen, and actually I need to add another carbon to my example molecule, because if I have a terminal alkene, it's neither cis nor trans. So throw in that extra methyl group there. Now if we hydrogenate, we specifically get a cis alkene. So since hydrogen is added to the same face of the pi bond, partial hydrogenation of an alkyne using a poisoned or deactivated catalyst will produce a cis alkene. Or if we end up with a situation where you'd have to call it E or Z instead, it would still be that the two hydrogens would add to the same face of that pi bond. Now, wouldn't it be nice though if we also had a way to make a trans double bond? And it turns out there is a way to do so. This is the one other radical mechanism that you're going to have this quarter. So it's going to be a little bit unusual compared to the other mechanisms that we've had. And in a sense, it involves a redox reaction because it involves sodium metal and ammonia liquid. Now, as a side note, there's a set of reagents that we're going to see in just a moment. I might have even flashed this up the other day talking about eliminations. Sodium amide, which is NaNH2. That's an extremely basic compound. The nitrogen itself, when it's neutral, tends to be a little bit basic. And in this case, because we've actually taken a hydrogen off of it, that makes it even more basic. So that compound, however, is not the same thing as sodium, ammonia. Comma just means that you're listing another reagent. So the ammonia itself, in fact, is cooled down to be liquefied. And then the sodium is just dissolved in it. I've never done this my own self, but apparently it turns a nice blue color in solution. And the reason that happens is because in ammonia, sodium will lose electrons. And so that's acting as a reducing reagent. So keep that in mind as you see the first step of the mechanism, which is the following. That one electron from sodium happens to add into the triple bond. More specifically, it's going to add into the antibond of one of the pi bonds of that triple bond. So just as a side explanatory note, let me say something about the source of the electrons. Sodium metal is a reducing agent. And acts as a source of electrons. And then in the first step of this reduction, the electron is added into the antibond of one of the pi bonds. And what you end up forming is going to be negatively charged, therefore, but also have a radical. Because we started with an even number of electrons, we've added just one into the system. So it's going to be something called a radical anion. Now, this anion is extremely basic because we have a negative charge on an sp2 hybridized orbital, which, remember, acidity. In fact, that question of acidity is going to come up in another reaction we do in just a moment. Alkanes are less acidic than alkenes, are less acidic than alkynes, because in an alkyne, once you lose that hydrogen, the lone pair that's there will be an sp hybridized orbital versus sp2 versus sp3. The more s character you have, the more favorable it is for that negative charge to form. Well, we do have just an sp2 hybridized orbital here, so it's not the most favorable. And ammonia, even though it is not an acid by any means, ammonia is itself a base, it will be attacked by this ion because it's basic enough. So we're partway to forming the product. Now, let me bring your attention to this radical, because technically, what is the hybridization of the carbon at this point? Well, how many sigma bonds are at that double bond position where the radical is? Only two, because you already have a double bond. So that's one pi bond, one sigma bond. You have a carbon-carbon bond. That's a second sigma bond. We have a radical there, which means we have a hydrogen missing. So there's no other bond there. Remember that single electrons do not count towards either Vesper theory or hybridization because they don't have the repulsive force of a pair of electrons. And since we only have two sigma bonds, there's only two pairs that are going to repel each other. And so what geometry does that produce? Linear. So I've kind of drawn it misleadingly, drawing it with a bend to it. But it doesn't truly exist yet, because we only have sp hybridization. And I'm pointing that out because that's the key feature of the next step of this mechanism. That because we have a radical, but because we still have a source of electrons in solution due to that sodium, that another electron gets added into this system. This time not into an antibond, though, to pair up with the radical that we've just made. Well, now, once you've added that extra electron in, what's going to happen to the hybridization at that position? What's it going to become? SP2, because we now have a third pair of electrons that's going to be doing repelling. Well, now that methyl group that I have there has to move one way or the other. It can't stay linear. So which way is it going to want to move? To be cis on the same face as the ethyl group, or does it want to be trans, opposite? Which one thermodynamically would be preferred? Trans. And so that is exactly what happens. That is why we end up with a trans alkene in this process. Now, when it gains that electron, it's now, again, basic. And so one more time, ammonia will be attacked by it. So, three types of hydrogenation. Plain hydrogenation, where we use exactly the same catalyst as we would for alkenes. The altered hydrogenation, where we use this Lindler's catalyst. Oh, and I'm so sorry. I'm so distracted by the fact we did not have our exam. I never wrote the word Lindler's. And yes, since I'm paused, for those of you who came in late, which on the day of the exam, I don't tend to give extra time on exams just for being late. But what had happened is I'm locked out of my office where the exams are sitting right now, eagerly awaiting you. So I was waiting for campus security, but unfortunately they weren't able to come before class time, so I'm going to have to just grab the exams during office hours, bring them with me, and then we'll have our exam in lab instead. But please, since everyone is here now, almost, make sure that you're in lab in time so that you don't miss out on the time. Because this, I don't know, I'm sure the two classes talk to each other, so you probably already heard, you're not getting a second day for the exam. So, questions about this hydrogenation. Oh, that's right, I was summarizing and realized I left that word Lindler's out. So we have plain hydrogenation, we have the hydrogenation using Lindler's catalyst, and then we have reduction using sodium.
Can you explain again how you get that radical?
Yes, so the way the reaction starts is you've got sodium metal that is providing the electrons. And so the electron ends up sitting in one of the antibonding orbitals of one of the pi bonds. And I don't know exactly why, because I'm not as familiar with alkynes, but I guess the structure of that alkyne, by having two pi bonds, somehow it's more susceptible to having that kind of reaction start, versus the alkene, which, again, it's probably a matter of thermodynamics, does not undergo that process. Once you add that electron in, if you think about a pi bond, you've got one orbital that could have two electrons, that's the bonding orbital. You have another orbital that's normally empty, which that's where the electron's going into. If you put that electron in there, you basically have a bond order of one half, which is not tenable. So what ends up happening is that bond splits. So you have three electrons that are trying to be stuffed into this bond. And so when it does collapse, two of the electrons end up on one atom, one of the electrons ends up on the other. Now the two that end up on one atom, that instantly makes it basic, so you rapidly get a neutralization reaction. You still have the extra electron left, and so that molecule gets reduced by sodium again, because there's still more electrons floating around in solution. So that makes an anion, which again gets neutralized, and then the stereochemistry is controlled by that last step, where you make the last anion, because it would rather be trans than cis. Does that help?
So the radical is anti-bonding or not?
It is. It would be to start with. Now, when I wrote it here, I've already written it split apart. So this would actually be in its own empty p orbital once the bond is broken. Other questions? Well, then let me show you why this set of reactions, these different hydrogenations, can be really useful, because we're going to see our first true example of a carbon-carbon bond-forming reaction. I know that we've seen sodium cyanide being used as a reagent, as a nucleophile, and I believe I mentioned at the time that that was a sneaky way of introducing a carbon-carbon bond. Well, in the alkyne chapter, your text presents another somewhat sneaky but direct way of making a carbon-carbon bond. And let me show you that reaction. So let's say that we have a terminal alkyne. Terminal meaning that the last carbon of the chain is one of the carbons of that triple bond, which is going to mean there's exactly one hydrogen at that end of the molecule. If we take a strong base, sodium amide is an example, so that NaNH2, it's one of the most common ones used as an example. You can deprotonate a terminal alkyne and make what's called an acetylide ion. A negatively charged triple bond. These are relatively easy to produce because compared to just plain hydrocarbons, alkynes are relatively acidic, as we reviewed just a little earlier today. The reason these can be useful is because although they're very, very basic, they are small and compact enough that you can do SN2 substitution as long as you're using a primary substrate. So if we had some other molecule, with a leaving group on it, triple bond would be able to attack, and we make a new carbon-carbon bond. Note how I've drawn the product here. One common mistake would be to take the carbon where the leaving group was and start from there to draw the triple bond. But that means that you would end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 carbons in your product structure if you drew it that way. Because you'd miss the bond that is formed between where the leaving group was and the triple bond, which is exactly the bond that this green arrow is pointing to. So just count carbons carefully whenever you're using alkynes, because triple bonds writing it confuses people. And let me write this note now, that this process is called alkylation, adding an alkyl group. Alkylation is possible using primary substrates. If you tried to use a secondary, you'd just get elimination because the acetylide ions are very basic. And if you did it with a tertiary, the only thing possible is elimination, so it'd be a useless reaction. Before I show you another example of how this is useful, let me back up a little bit and talk about this lab that we just did making an alkyne, because I'll show you the lab and at the same time I'll show you the mechanism for this reaction. So keep this under your keep this under your lecture notes, because really I'm just focusing on mechanism at the moment. And give me a moment to make sure that I'm writing this correctly. Yes. So you started out with stilbene dibromide. That's the short name for this compound. You've taken an alkene and reacting it with Br2 in the absence of light. So remember, if you have Br and light, that's going to be free radical halogenation. Bromine without light, then that's electrophilic addition. So we started with an alkene, made this dibromide, which looks deceptive, but we could swing around on this single bond to get it into the correct geometry the way that we might have drawn it back when we did that first reaction. But what you could react this with is that same sodium amide that I just mentioned a moment ago, but use two equivalents, because we have a hydrogen and a bromine that are currently antiperiplanar to each other. Now, even if they weren't, since the single bond does rotate, they could come into being antiperiplanar from each other. But what would happen if we had just the first elimination occur? So what I'm putting in the dotted lines here does not exist as an isolatable intermediate, because the reaction just continues. But what you end up with first after one pair of hydrogen and bromine get eliminated would be an alkene that still has a hydrogen and bromine, which, if they're in trans configuration as they are in this example, and why? Because trans would be far more favored in terms of thermodynamics. Well, if they're trans, there's still going to be an antiperiplanar relationship between the two. And so what you can get is yet another elimination. I didn't show the mechanism for the first one, but you've seen several E2s. And in fact, this is still an E2 elimination. But now what it produces is an alkyne. And so there's this general set of steps that can be used. That if you start out with an alkene,
You can react it with bromine, again without light, to make a vicinal dibromide. That dibromide, you can react with a strong base, do a double elimination, and end up with an alkyne.
So, since this is such a common trick, we're pretending now that we're after the exam. This might be the one example of a multi-step reaction that I have you responsible for on the final. A way to convert an alkene to an alkyne. Again, it's only two steps. It's these two steps. But we're, and we'll wait till next quarter really to get in synthesis. Those of you who've talked to past O-Chem students, they've probably been coaching you and say, oh, get ready for all these tough synthesis problems. They're coming. But the approach I've used this quarter is a little different. I focus much more on just mechanism and fundamentals this quarter. So this will be our one little step upwards heading into 12B. Yes? Is there what? Yes, it would. Chlorine and bromine both can do that double addition, so you can use chlorine to get this elimination occur as well. Bromine eliminates a little bit more cleanly, so if you could use bromine, it's a little bit better in this specific case. So, let's move on to the next reaction then, which is actually to backstep and talk about the other electrophilic additions that you've already learned and how they would interact with alkynes. And what I want to start with is the toughest one first, which is the hydroboration reaction. So let's again work with a terminal alkyne of some sorts. Let's say that we used borane and THF. And let's imagine that only one addition to the borane happens. Because as we learned, each hydrogen on the borane can react. So after just one step, we would end up with what? What would be the geometry of addition of borane to a triple bond? Is it a syn addition or is it an anti addition? Oh my gosh. No, this you gotta know. I mean, the exams today. Hydroboration is a syn addition or an anti addition? Syn, why? That four-centered transition state. Remember how we talked about it's physically impossible for you to have a square where one bond is pointing one way and one bond is pointing the other? So the hydrogen and the boron add to the same face of, well, the double bond for today's exam, or the triple bond for what we're working on now. The whole point of saying that is that you're going to end up with a cis configuration on the triple bond because of that. So after one addition, hydrogen goes to the less substituted position. Same reasoning as before. We'll have one hydrogen that starts out there already. And notice it's not the cis product. I almost made that mistake. It's not necessarily the cis product that you're going to end up with, because the hydrogen was already there, the R group was already there, and they're both pushed away at the same time. So that means the hydrogen's going to end up itself being cis with the alkyl group that's there. But we can't help it. Thermodynamically, it might want to be the other way around. But it's not possible in this reaction. But Here's kind of a problem with this hydroboration. There's two other hydrogens on there that can react, correct, on the boron? But can't the alkene itself also react with yet another molecule of borane? The answer is yes. And so what you can end up with is an absolute mess of all these different borons and carbons all networked to each other. And so in order to do hydroboration, we have to use a slightly different reagent. That's what I'm leading up to here. So let me point out in text why this is a bad thing. The alkene can react with a separate molecule of borane. Additionally, the hydrogens on the boron already added could continue or would continue to react with other alkenes and alkynes. The result would be a messy network of carbon and hydrogen, or carbon and boron bonds. But we could still do this reaction if we use a different reagent. So the solution to the problem: use a hindered borane derivative. I forget the name of this. There is some kind of quickie name. And notice the unusual way that I'm writing it, because it makes it a little bit easier to remember. It kind of looks like the letter pi, where one end of it I've attached to boron. Notice that part of that structure is in parentheses. And so what that means is there's two bonds to boron, each one of which has this substituted alkyl group. There is also one hydrogen that's present on the boron. So what this causes is two things. First, only one hydrogen per boron is going to react. So once we make that first intermediate that has the alkene, the only thing that could continue to react, well, actually, is nothing. Because with all these alkyl groups there, it prevents having yet another boron or borane adding into the same molecule. So there's only one reactive hydrogen per molecule, and sterically, it prevents any other reactions occurring anyways. So this is the modified reagent. And I'll just show a mechanistic step once for this. So boron's attacked, hydrogen attacks backwards. Remember that this is the origin of that four-center transition state, the fact that both of these things occur simultaneously.
We're going to end up with kind of a messy-looking structure. Again, let me point out the two notes here, that there's no more hydrogens to react on the boron, and that that there's too much steric hindrance for further reaction. Overall, here's what would occur. Take an alkyne, react it with this modified borane reagent. You'll end up producing, after oxidation of that boron, this product, which is called an enol. It's called an enol because it has an alkene and an alcohol together as the same on the same molecule. Now, the term enol could be used generally to describe any molecule that has both an alcohol and alkene. But there's something particularly special that occurs if you have the alcohol on the same position as an alkene. If you have the alcohol vinyl to the alkene. Because thermodynamically, these molecules can't exist. That's again why I'm starting with this reaction first, because it has something unusual that occurs afterwards. So we've learned about different types of isomers. We've talked about stereoisomers, regioisomers. We had briefly touched on just the general term structural isomer. And way back at the beginning of the quarter, I might even mention these things called functional isomers. Same structural formula, but different functional groups. So the reaction of this enol is a very common problem that we don't really get much into until next quarter. But it comes up exactly here in 12A, where we talk about the reaction of alkynes with borane. This process I'm about to show you is called tautomerization. And before showing you the mechanism, let me show you the transformation that's going to occur. Notice the arrow that I used between the two here, a reversible reaction arrow, because these two structures are not resonance structures, although they kind of have that feel to it, and in fact the intermediate is going to involve resonance, but it's formally a reaction. And notice what's going on. We are losing a carbon-carbon double bond, but gaining a carbon-oxygen double bond. Notice also that we're losing the oxygen-hydrogen bond, single bond, but ending up with a new carbon-hydrogen single bond. If you calculate the energy differences of those four things, how much energy it would take to get rid of the carbon-carbon double bond, how much energy is released when you make the carbonyl, how much energy would be needed to pull the hydrogen off of oxygen, how much energy do you get back when you put it on the carbon, to go from the left to the right is overall an exothermic reaction. Exothermic enough that it happens very rapidly in solution, whether you have base or acid. So let me highlight what's lost, and again highlight what's gained. First, let me state this. Tautomerization is not resonance. involves the loss of two bonds and the formation of two bonds. Overall, the process is exothermic for forming the carbonyl. This specific type of tautomerization, because there's not only one, but this is one of the most common ones. This is called the ketoenol. Tautomerization. And let me show you the mechanism that would be applicable in this case, because we have basic conditions that are being used. Next quarter, we'll learn an acid version. So in the basic version, hydroxide reacts to pull off a hydrogen from the OH group. This happens for two reasons. One, alcohols in general are roughly the same acidity as water. So in reverse, that means hydroxide is roughly the same base acidity as other alkoxides. But on top of that, once we pull the hydrogen off, there's resonance that's possible. One of the factors that we've discussed as far as what affects acidity is resonance itself. And so pull that hydrogen off, we end up with an alkoxide that can undergo resonance. It's exactly at that point where we're leading towards changing the types of bonds that are present. Because remember that quite technically, resonance structures aren't real structures. They're different aspects of representing a real structure. So it's not truly correct to say that the bonds are forming and breaking at this point. But the process completes then momentarily when I show hydrogen being attacked. So when the oxygen does form its double bond, it pushes the carbon-carbon double bond open, forming a carbanion, which again normally is not favorable, but as we'll see next quarter, can happen because there is resonance. So the reverse situation is partly true. But what will happen now is that water, not H+, gets attacked. And I got to make a big, huge note of this. Because this is one of those mistakes that will show up over and over again across the next few quarters. You know you want to add an H+ on. And so you understandably put H+ down. Except that we're in hydrogen peroxide and sodium hydroxide right now. So there's no way an H plus could exist in solution all on its own. So we can show water, however, the conjugate of sodium hydroxide being involved. And so that's what I've done here. What this means, though, overall, is that if you have a terminal alkyne, if you react it first with this hindered borane, followed by sodium hydroxide and hydrogen peroxide, you're going to end up with an aldehyde. If instead you have an internal alkyne and you react it with the same set of reagents. Then you form a ketone.
Now, which R group will the ketone be closer to? Well, sometimes that can't actually be controlled. So it would work best if you've got a symmetric alkyne. But we're close to being done with alkynes, because now we can go back yet another step to some simpler reactions. Just reacting with water, just reacting with HBr. That's what we're going to do on Thursday to wrap up with alkynes. My hope is then that Friday will be left just for review, and if everything goes correctly, that you'll get your exams back so we can review the answers so that you can prepare for the final. So, we will again have the exam in lab. Please, please, please be on time. I don't want to shortchange any of you on time. I do have office hours. I need to get into my office first, though, so I might be delayed just a bit. And office hours are going to be held over in the division office today. So if you're not familiar where the PSMB division office is, if you go out towards the planetarium, towards the grassy field over there, it's the S3 building. And it's the side of the building facing the grassy field.